big show for you here today. And I always say it's a big show, but I mean, like, this isn't a big show. This is the massive, humongous, gargantuan episode, whatever the word is. That's the type of show we've got for you today, because EJ Snyder of Bootleg Football joins me to, I would call it the 101 intro to the 2025 NFL draft. It's way more than that. Everything you need to know about the prospects in this year's draft class, we're going to give it to you today. Overview of the class, positional previews, stand on the table for your guys, all that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, February 27th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball because we are still here in Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine on Radio Row. And joining me to talk a little ball is one of my good buddies. And number one, his name is EJ Snyder. He's a co-founder of Bootleg Football with Brett Coleman, of course, good friend of the show. I wanted EJ to introduce you not as like a draft analyst because yep. and like my one of my go-to draft guys, even though that is true, because I think you're a lot more than that. Like, you're just a true preeminent ball knower. So EJ, welcome to the show, buddy. I'm really excited about this.
First time we've gotten to do this, and in person is even better. I'm really glad that's the way it happened. But come on, this is NFL Christmas, and being able to sit down with one of the guys I've known the longest in this industry, pure pleasure.
Honestly, I can't believe it has taken me this long to get you on my show. You did you got me on your show first last summer to the yep. receiver preview, which was excellent. So you've got the leg up in the friendship for sure. But you also have the leg up on me by a significant degree in terms of knowledge about this draft as a whole. Because like I said, man, you've got to be just one of the busiest people I know, because you guys at Bootleg, you cover the NFL, you know. Yeah. Left, right, and center. You do everything, but you also have your eye on these draft prospects way in advance. So I am still the idiot, as I told you about this class, and as I've said on the show, I'm still kind of still getting familiar. I've done some work on some of the offensive prospects, but you're here today to not just make the listeners, the viewers smart, you're yep. also going to make me smart about this draft today too.
Well, I hope so. It is a challenge to dovetail those two, and I think a lot of people interface with our show for their particular bent. You know, they're a fan of a team and yeah. they're with us during the regular season, or they're a draft fan and they join us then, or they want their previews in the summer. And then they realize that, oh, wait, it's the same two guys all year round. You're doing it. And one of the primary overlaps is really the end of the regular season. The most important games of the season, you got postseason, you got Super Bowl coming. And if you don't start on draft prospects before that ends, you're not ready for right. Shrine and the All-Star Game circuit and whatever. So, yeah, I start watching film, and a lot of people in my life are like, oh, the NFL season just ended. You're done, right?
Oh, please.
And I'm like, no, I'm doing double right now. I can't wait till it's actually over, because then I can get back to just doing one thing.
Yeah, brother, 100%. I feel you on that completely. So, again, this is how the show's going to flow. First segment, we're going to do kind of a general overview of the draft. Again, this is where you're going to really educate me. And then the second segment, we'll throw it a break. Then we'll come back. We will do quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, names to know, people. Again, this is sort of everybody's kind of intro to this draft process. So we'll do that. And then we're finishing up with a new segment that we're going to have during draft season, Stand on the Table. EJ is going to get to throw multiple names out there, but every time we have somebody on during draft season, I want them to kind of stand on the table for like one prospect, one of their guys. And we'll do that all draft season long, but EJ is going to be the debut person here. So let's start with the general overview of this class. Again, very high level strengths, weaknesses, just kind of where you're at with like the class as a whole.
Well, first thing I want to say about this draft class is that a lot of people say this draft class is bad. Mm. And the translation of bad for me is not bad. This is not a bad draft class. And I want everybody to know that. This is a different draft class than a lot of others because it lacks flash at the star positions at the top. So people who are more casually interested in the draft look at it and go, it's not good.
Yeah.
And that's not true. There is a wide middle class in this draft of great football players that are going to be stocking rosters. You need those guys in the NFL for years and years and be productive pros. And some of the, you know, talent variants from other years and things like quarterback and wide receiver, maybe even top corner. Yeah, there's not as many of those up at the top. But things like defensive tackle are historically deep. We've got maybe 40 guys who got draftable grades as defensive tackles. Last year, just for reference, there were maybe 20
Yeah.
So twice as many. You're going to see guys in the fourth and fifth round get drafted and play starting roles, which is not common. Running back depth, which we'll talk about a bunch today, is fantastic. One of the, but you know I love running backs.
Yeah. EJ is a running back guy, so we're definitely going to hit that hard.
This is pure candy for me. You're seeing guys, again, in the fourth or fifth round who have legitimate chance to be longtime NFL contributors.
Amazing.
Which is fantastic. Tight end is deeper than it's been in years at the top and the bottom. Yeah. We have star power at the top. We have guys in the middle. And then we have folks at the bottom that are going to fill out those third tight end roles, which you need in the NFL. It's not sexy, but you need them. Offensive line, it's okay. If you need a starting left tackle, you probably should do that early. But they're, again, down the board, interior offensive linemen. Some tackles developmentally, if they don't have to start right away, I think have potential. It's the strongest class there. No. But there is a lot to like in this draft class and a lot of really deep position groups that I find as a draft analyst tons of fun. I get it that casual folks are like, hey, there's no Peyton Manning. This is garbage.
Right, right. It's so fascinating because I think you can juxtapose this year's draft with both this year's free agent crop
Correct.
And also last year's draft in an interesting way. And like rookie draft specifically for dynasty folks.
Yeah.
I mean, last year the strength was at quarterback and wide receiver. This, and it was kind of like, it's not a ton of running backs. I mean, there end up being great picks like Bucky Irving and stuff like that. But and I know you were a Bucky Irving guy, so you had to feel pretty good about that
one. I did.
Should have had you on the show last summer. Damn it. That's on me. That's on me as a host. I'm working to get better. But anyway, so this year, though, the strength is at the running back position, probably early in dynasty drafts. It is at the tight end position where there really wasn't that last year, other than the one guy, obviously, in Brock Bowers. So I think that's an interesting juxtaposition. And then even as you were talking about the left tackle kind of like better do that early, there's actually – I mean, it's not an abundance of names, but I was talking about this with Jory on the earlier episode this week. There are some like serviceable left tackles in free agency. So I think it dovetails well to kind of be able to check boxes for teams this offseason.
And teams really do have to do that. The alchemy of team building is understanding that every year, and if every NFL team is a new team. And GMs say that all the time. Fans don't love to hear it, but we're in a point of the NFL cycle of growth, if you want to call it, where 50-60% of contracts are 1 to 2 years. So you're turning over a significant portion of your roster and you have to replace those guys. And there's really only two ways to do that. You do it in free agency, you can do it in the draft. You've got draft capital on one hand, you've got cap space or cash space on the other hand. And you really do have to look at, well, you know, A to B. If we do it over here, what's the cost over here? Can we? Do we have enough resources? Or are we going to have to go this way because, you know, we traded away all our picks and we're just going to have to be miserly about cash? But you've got to come up with the whole picture at the end. It's never perfect. There's sort of A, B, and C for every option. But that's where the great GMs are a step ahead. The Howie Roseman's right. They're playing chess. They're looking at 2 years down the road. A lot of folks are, as we know, more hand-to-mouth in the NFL.
Yeah, definitely a little bit more reactionary, for
Correct.
Sure. And it's interesting, too, again, kind of dovetailing this draft class as a whole and everything, is that you mentioned the strength is at the defensive line, especially the interior defensive tackle class. There's a lot of names that people need to know there, and just general defensive line disruptors. What a perfect sort of second act in terms of the last major NFL event that we saw, which was the Super Bowl, where like every single person watching that game is just, they got their ass kicked up front, being the Kansas City Chiefs by the Philadelphia Eagles. And you've got a lot of, if you're a team that's trying to chase that model, which, by the way, like, how stupid is that? Like, big lesson from the Super Bowl. If your pass rush wins with four, people are going to try to copy the Eagles model. You mean the model of like the game of football? Give me a break.
Yep.
So again, that's going to be a talking point, and it works really well with this particular draft class.
It does. And a lot of, again, we talked about the NFL being cyclical and there are down classes. You talked about tight end class not being great last year. Well, the NFL needs to restock. And sometimes it's every two seasons, sometimes it's every three, sometimes there's a bit of a drought. So teams kind of hold off. They're looking at that balance down the board in the draft, and they go, like, the fifth tight end this year is really not that good. I should probably pick something else. Well, that bill comes due. You still need tight ends. So you get to a class like this, you got tight ends up and down the board or defensive linemen that are available in the third or the fourth. You can pick two. You can double dip and feel really good about that.
It's an eat your vegetables type of draft, seemingly, right? There's not six quarterbacks going in the top 12. There's not going to be three wide receivers in the top 10, anything like that. You're going to see a lot of big people.
Yeah.
You're going to see a lot of big people, which, again, is those aren't the guys that you're drafting in fantasy or getting the big headlines or things like that. But it does matter to drink ecosystems and building those teams up as a whole. So that's why this draft really is important. I want to go back to one of the points that you made about it being like a, quote, bad draft, because I think this is too existential of a question to do, you know,
I
like,
doubt it.
Damn, 10 minutes into the podcast or whatever. But you know, in the fantasy space, people always talk about like draft capital, like, you know,
correct,
draft capital matters, this, that, and the other. How do we kind of weigh, like, okay, draft capital matters, guys getting picked higher matters, and obviously that's just inherently true. It's not some, I think it's talked about as if it's some kind of revelation where,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, bro, like, players going higher in the draft usually probably have a better chance of being better. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah, go figure, right? How do we weigh, like, that is obviously a truth about the position when, or the sport as a whole, when maybe this isn't a bad class, but maybe there aren't as many. You could tell me how many you have if you're at this point yet. Like, there aren't that many true, like, first-round grades. You see what I'm saying here?
Absolutely, no. And it is going to affect the draft, where people get picked, and that's just a function. Certainly the top 10 salaries are set.
Yeah.
Like, if you pick a tight end, say, in the top 10, he's automatically one of the highest-paid tight ends in the league.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not position-specific. It's you were picked number 7. You're slotted. This is what you get. Here's your yearly increase. That's a lot of pressure for a young player. But in terms of balance, when people are talking about trading up and down, when you can get a guy in the fourth that's very similar to a grade maybe you have in the board in the second, you either do or don't have a lot of incentive to do that deal, right? Hey, if you're going to give me a pick, but the person moving up has the same set of resources and is like, well, I don't really need to give you a pick to move up, because if I miss this guy and I'm going for defensive tackle, I've got this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. So there's that wide middle class, and we're going to see a lot of variance, because we always see variance in team boards, but it's going to stretch into extra rounds, and we're going to see guys go off at the end of the second round because the team just really liked them.
Yeah.
And maybe they weren't on everybody's big board, but they're very close in grade to somebody that's going to go off in the fourth, and you're going to see that spread. And as a draft analyst, I think that's going to be really fun because it makes for an unpredictable draft,
mm-hmm.
a lot of kind of aha
yes,
moments.
Yes,
so I'm all for it.
I think we'll get one of those picks, if you have a good example of this, please hit me with it. But
panics.
Well, yeah.
That was the example.
That is definitely one. To me, I thought like a couple of years ago, remember when the Patriots took Cole Strange in the first round?
Yep,
I do. Like, the Rams had that video where it's like, what are we doing here? Those guys don't even have a damn first round pick, and they're like broadcasting their thoughts about Paul Strange going,
correct,
you know, in the first round. I feel like we're going to get maybe multiple moments like that this draft cycle.
We will, and it's weird because we do a draft live stream where we do every pick in the draft, and
beasts.
We know people in teams now,
mm-hmm.
and they get that information on a feed before it goes up on TV, well before. And that, I mean, famously, yeah. media members have, you know, pipped all the draft picks, but teams get it even before that. And so we're sitting there talking about a pick or two ago, and like Brett's phone will buzz.
Yep.
And he'll look at me and he's like, I'm like, what's about to happen?
Yo, we had that last year. We did the Yahoo draft night stream, and I hope we bring it back again. Really looking forward to it. I know we are, Colin. I know we are, but I'm trying to, you know, build some suspense here to the audience.
Nice.
This is show business, baby.
That's right.
But anyways, like, Charles Robinson obviously is super plugged in.
Amazing.
He was on the show, and he basically was telling us, like, before the draft, you know, stream or whatever come up on TV, like, okay, this is the pick, whatever, let's start breaking. It was like, let's be ahead of it, basically.
Yeah.
The Penix one, though, he's like, Falcons pick is in. I'm not gonna tell you guys. And I just want, like, and you'll,
and, watch.
And he's like, you will never guess what's about to happen. And I mean, this video is out there, obviously, on the internet. I don't think I've screamed, maybe squealed that loud ever in my life, potentially, or at least, you know, since I hit puberty.
Right. You were channeling the Mina reaction to Daniel Jones.
Yeah, it was very similar. I think from an octave standpoint, I might have been higher, to be quite honest. But anyways, yeah, so I think when we're talking about this, like, draft capital thing, and again, these lack of maybe true first-round grades or whatever, we are going to see some skill position players, too, probably get that inflation. I think it definitely at the wide receiver position. I'm glad you brought up the contract point of this because, I mean, you just look at the contract I've got over the cap up right now for the wide receiver position, man. Like, yeah, these guys are getting paid a lot of money at the top of this position. Like, we talked about how, and we'll talk about Travis Hunter, of course, but like the wide receiver cornerback, you know, kind of disparity in the top salaries. Like, you know, the top paid corners are making like $24 million a year. That's DK Metcalf money. That's like 13th highest wide receiver before we get the two Bengals guys coming in.
Right.
And that's the thing, though. When you take a receiver in the first round, even if he's not a true first round grade or whatever, you're getting a huge discount if that guy can become an immediate contributor.
Absolutely. And teams know that for sure. Players know that as well. I'm sure Travis and his team are considering that as they sort of look and people ask that question over and over again. But it is a real thing, and it's a value add in a very serious way to that overall pie, as we talked about it. Like, if I can spend less cash and get a top contributor at wide receiver, no brainer, but you got to hit the pick.
Marvin Harrison Jr., his average per year is $8.8 million. Can you tell me the two veteran receivers he is sandwiched between at that salary?
I absolutely can't, because $8.8 million in free agency last year was basically a third wave deal.
Yeah, it's Mike Williams and Adam Thielen.
Well, there's a bit of a difference.
Bit of a difference, and Thielen's the under on that. It's like, I mean, again, it's an incredible value. Even Rome Odunze is like Jawan Jennings money.
Yes.
I mean, shoot, you go down the list, like, you're trying to find, like, let me, like, Xavier Leggett, who, again, that's a guy that snuck into the first round.
Correct.
And I think we will see something like that this year at the receiver position. And I think Leggett might be a better prospect. Maybe, and again, we'll see. I kind of was a little whatever, mixish. But, yeah, that's DJ Chark money.
Yeah.
Like, even if Leggett doesn't necessarily pan out as like a wide receiver one or anything like that, that is still a significant value. I know the Panthers had DJ Chark on their team the year before. Who do you think was a more, even if, again, Leggett didn't have like his best moments towards the end of the year, who would you rather have on your team? Xavier Leggett in year one or DJ Chark in year whatever? Who cares?
Right. It's the upside and looking at the young receiver who has ceiling, who is basically the same money, but has more potential. That's why teams recycle at that position, and that's how they do it.
Any other sort of like big picture thoughts on this draft before we get into specific offensive positions?
I just want to caution folks. Like you said, this is the kickoff. This is a lot of people's start to being familiar with this class. And a lot of people want to jump in right now and be like, what's your ranking?
Yeah.
Like 1 through 50. Well, that's assuming that I've seen all 50. I try and do a top 135 watch before the combine, because that gives me roughly the top.
Oh, just 135. Oh, small number you threw out there.
Well, the 135 piece is really, I'm trying to get top 100.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a lot of focus, shows like this, you know, rankings, big boards, you name it. There's going to be a lot of focus on those top 100. There always are. Well, you can't just watch 100 guys and say that's the top 100.
Yeah.
You got to watch a few more. And then there's a couple you just throw in for fun with popcorn. And you end up at like 125, 135. And you can roughly say, coming to Indianapolis, I'm pretty familiar with that top 100, and I can make statements like it's a pretty strong class historically because I've been doing this for a while.
Right.
So for me, it's a necessary evil, but don't get so hung up on where a guy is on the board right now. Nobody's run. They start running today. We all know that's going to start the movement, but it's not going to stop the movement. Then there's pro days. Then there's rumors. Then there's injuries. Medicals already started to leak out, right? So going to swing the top of the board with Abdul Carter. All that stuff has yet to happen. And I had a good friend of mine who's a team reporter reach out like last week, and he's like, man, give me something. They're eating me alive. Like, who's the Chargers going to pick? I'm like, buddy, we're not even at the combine
yet. Give me
like,
a break.
Tell them to relax. He's like, I am, but they won't stop. And it's great for folks like us. Folks are hungry for draft content. That's great. But just have a little patience. Let the water settle a little bit. Combine's going to start that fire, and it's going to burn all the way to the end of April. So just kind of enjoy the ride and don't get hung up on, well, he's at 200 right now and that's not fair. It'll change.
It's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Correct.
Like, we say that about the NFL regular season, and that is absolutely true for draft season, because we aren't even actually talking about any games or any changing information. It's just the taking in of what is already there. Just last thing, you know, you mentioned like your rankings and things like that. Do you have kind of like a top five, top 10 sort of favorite prospects right now?
Not yet. I'm a weird one.
Who are the names sort of that people should know, even if they are like defensive players, things like that?
Oh, you mean just like top five
draft? Yeah.
Oh, I mean, you got to start with Abdul Carter, even with the injury, let's say revelation, right? We don't know everything about that, but it was a big splash last night.
Yep.
We'll learn more about that. But regardless, however that works out, it doesn't sound terribly serious.
A lot of debate last night at a High Velocity, one of the bars that everybody goes to here. What is a stress reaction versus a fracture, like a bunch of football bros with like three drinks in them trying to decide like what's a reaction and what's a fracture.
Yeah.
We're very qualified to do that, by the way.
Right. I was going to say everybody pulled out their med degree and made that happen.
Exactly.
Cam Ward's the name you need to know at the top of the quarterback rankings whenever he gets picked, whether it's one overall, it will be in the top five. I think he is consensus number one right now. I don't see that changing outside of off-field revelations or a big injury or something like that. So he's certainly a name you got it. We talked about Travis Hunter, the two-way star from Colorado. Is he a corner? Is he a wide receiver? Doesn't matter. He's a great football player. He's absolutely top five. I think he's got talent to go top one. It's just an odd way to spend that pick, and it's also very expensive. But he's there as well. Shedeur Sanders is the second quarterback, which you need to know, but I don't know that he's going to figure into the top 10. I think somebody will slide the chips in just because they'll panic.
Yeah.
And supply is always outstripped by demand. And again, you said the balance of the free agency class this year, that just kind of ramps that up. And a guy like Shedeur is going to make some money off that. Should he be picked in the top 12 just on a talent evaluation? He should not. Will he? Probably, because it's the NFL. Tet McMillan we'll talk about.
Yep.
I think he's a guy that's being talked about as the top wide receiver right now. I've heard he may run very slowly, which is not surprising given his tape, but that does have an effect. It takes a little shine off. And when you're debating, hey, this guy or this guy, and somebody goes out and runs a possibly very slow time. Again, we talk about combine winners and losers. Tet just has to not be terrible.
Yep.
If he's okay, he'll be fine. He'll retain a lot of his position because we know about the ball skills and the route running and everything else. But he just has to not be like historically slow, because GMs in this league are risk averse. And that's a risk, right? If he goes out and runs, I'm not saying he's going to. If he goes out and runs like a 4.72, a GM's got to justify to all his scouts, like, the only guys that have ever been successful in the league at the wide receiver position, it's like three of them ran over 4.7. Like, that's tough to go against. And usually, GMs will take the path of least resistance. So, big week for Tet. Mason Graham, one of the top defensive tackles, probably one of the first defensive names, Michigan guy. Played next to Kenneth Grant. He's going to test really well. He's a beast. Plays with a lot of energy. That's five.
Yeah. Perfect. All right, let's throw it a break. When we come back, we will dive deeper into these offensive skill position players right after this. All right, we're back. EJ is continuing to make us smarter and smarter. I feel my brain expanding on this draft class here. Let's get into these offensive skill positions. You kind of started to touch on it. Let's hit the quarterback group where I'm with you that it does seem to everybody, kind of the talk is that Cam Ward does seem to be settling in as that consensus guy. So with that in mind, that he's the QB1 of this class, where do you sort of slot him in terms of the guys who went last year, just generally as a first-round quarterback prospect?
Yeah, a lot of people were kind of shoehorning him in and saying he was not top five last year, and which would have meant, depending on where your rankings were, probably after J.J. McCarthy. So it was like clear separation between last year and this year.
Yep.
I don't know that it's that clear. He would have been in the mix for that fourth spot for me. I live up near Washington State, so I was familiar with him. We thought we were going to get to see him at Shrine last year. Like, literally, we were there. We were expecting him, and then he took the offer at Miami, which was very good for him. Played himself into a good spot, because now he's not quarterback four, he's quarterback one.
Right.
That's going to make him a bunch more money. He's got a very live arm, and I think the thing that people really gravitate to with Cam is his ability to play off structure.
Yeah.
And that's a bigger deal in the NFL. We heard a lot. This was a debate we all had last year about Caleb. He's not on Caleb's level that way, but he is one of the best in this draft at doing that, combined with a very live arm and a great attitude. He thinks he is the alpha when he steps on the field, any field.
Yep.
And you want that from your quarterback. And GMs are going to love that. Offensive coordinators are going to love that. So I think he's pretty solid in his spot. I, again, would have had him in the mix for quarterback four last year. I like his game a lot. I certainly know opinions vary and people didn't have him there or don't. I don't think he's out of the conversation of being, you know, in the mix last year as in that top five.
Yeah, like, there's a lot to like with Cam Ward.
Yeah.
Led the nation in adjusted yards per attempt, which is a super important metric. He's aggressive throwing the ball downfield, and he's like a – and I say that kindly, because to me, I would much rather try to tame the wild horse than to try to get a timid horse to run out of the damn barn. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
I do.
That's what I'd rather – take at a quarterback, you know, especially, and I've heard the same things about him from like the alpha perspective, the leadership. And I just think he is going to interview really well here. Like there's going to be a group that falls in love with him. I was talking with a few people about like the Titans, right?
And, yeah.
You know, it's tough because I think they don't have a quarterback and they need a multi-year answer. Like all the conversations I've had with people this week about Tennessee, it's that they are not going to settle for just some little like, oh, let's trot out Derek Carr and like see what happens. Yeah. You know, they want to be able to sell something to 100%. The fan base and to a very fickle ownership group at this point, as we've seen with the last 2 years. And part of that could be like taking Cam Ward at the first overall pick. I also, as I'm having these conversations, think in the back of my mind, like, are you just telling me and other people this because you would want to auction off that pick and you want to get somebody to come up? And that totally makes sense. So I think they're probably either, if I had to predict Tennessee, I think they're either a Darnold team or they're taking Cam Ward at one. And those would be my two, because I think those are multi-year solutions that you can sell. And I do know that the coaching staff is really high on both of those players that just threw out there. So I think if they took him first, I think I could get myself to buy into it, even if I don't think that's what's going
to
happen.
And they need people to buy into it. You talked about the fans. You talked about the ownership group. You have players.
Yeah.
Right? And I had this discussion actually with my Uber driver on the way in that tanking is not a real thing.
No, yeah.
Like, it's a fan perception that someone, anyone, could walk into a room of grown men who make their living beating the hell out of each other and go, you know, there's this kid. He's 22. We might get him next year if you all suck for an entire year.
So he might be good.
Right.
He
so might. Just take, you know, 20 weeks off and get your ass kicked on, you know, national TV. Not great. It doesn't happen. Players are going to play. Coaches are going to try and win every game. And you need to be able to sell something to them.
Tape is your resume, man. And you can't just put out bad tape.
And so both of those answers, I agree with you, are something that you can sell, because you can't sell running Will Levis back. That's not going to work. And Cam is the hope. And Darnold is the, we know what he did last year. He's much better than what we have. And they become real options that people can rally behind and start to believe in.
Okay, let's talk about Shedeur here, who just a very, very different player. Very, very different player. I've seen a lot more of him just because I've obviously been watching Travis Hunter, who we're going to get to.
Yep.
Pros and cons to you with his game.
I think, again, this situation is elevating his stock. And it's hard to separate the player from the stock.
Yeah.
Right? Supply and demand is one thing. Tape is another thing.
Okay.
He's a very solid player. Yeah. He's a distributor. Mm-hmm. He's pretty smart. And somebody made a comp the other day, and I don't know about you. I have a love-hate relationship with comps.
Yeah. I've sold out for comps. Let me back that up. to quote my good buddy Adam Rank, I didn't sell out. I bought in. I've bought in on comps.
You bought into comps. Comps have their use, but they're also fraught with pitfalls.
Yeah.
Anyways. Friend of mine threw out a comp the other day, and I'm having trouble not seeing it, and that is very, very difficult for me as an evaluator. So luckily, I've already done a bunch of Shedeur work, because if I hadn't, I would feel tainted at this point. He said, basically, he's Teddy Bridgewater with a better PR team.
And it's incredible you said that, because I said this to producer Colin the other day when we were talking about Shedeur. I was like, yeah, I was watching him, and I'm like, this is kind of Teddy Bridgewater at peak Teddy Bridgewater, right? And I thought I was like so smart for coming to that by myself, and then you say that. I've heard 100 people give out that comp, so clearly I'm not smart, or maybe we're all smart, or maybe we're all idiots.
Yeah, I don't think it's smart or not smart. I think it is one of those things that as soon as you see it, or in this case hear it, you can't unsee or unhear it, and you're like, oh yeah. And this is not a shot at Teddy. I like Teddy.
Yeah, no, I don't think this is. And, you know, Nate at one point this year talked about, like, Jaden Daniels. He compared him to a little bit of, like, Teddy, like, fast Teddy Bridgewater, and Commanders fans hated it. He's like, no. Like, I mean that as a compliment. I think Jaden obviously is going to way outkick, you know, Teddy Bridgewater's career. But there was a lot to like in Teddy's game for a long time.
Yeah, and there's a lot to like in Shedeur's game. This is not a backhanded shot at Shedeur. As you know, my job as an analyst is to be as agnostic about these guys as possible, because you don't know where they're going to go. You don't know the situation they're going to land in, and you have to accurately assess strengths and weaknesses in their game. So a lot of strength. There's a few weaknesses, but, you know, he decided to not throw here, and that's, you know, a talk at the combine. I don't think it's a bad decision for him.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a lot to gain here.
Right.
Everybody's seen his tape, and his tape is good. if he goes out and throws, this, as you know, is a bit of a carnival. Turns into an arm strength thing, right?
Right.
And he's not going to win there.
Yeah.
Like, and his team knows that.
Yeah.
So, like, why would I do that? It's a bit like, this is going to be an odd long walk for a short drink of water. But if I'm the agent for a running back or an inside linebacker, I'm telling them not to go to All-Star games because they're going to get set up in drills
where they're not leveraged. Right.
Right? They're going to get beat over and over again on tape, no matter how good they are. They're not supposed to win those drills.
Yep.
And you really don't get a true picture of those two positions until game action. And that's the minimum of that week. So you do get exposure to the NFL staff, which is great. That's a good reason to go to an All-Star game. You get the NFL coaching for a week. That is also a great reason to go to an All-Star game. But in terms of what gets seen from a public perspective, oh, dude, that guy got whipped all week. And you're like, he was supposed to.
Yeah, people clowning him on Twitter or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, 100%.
Right.
I hear you on that. The Teddy Bridgewater comp, just to come back to it, because I think to me, it's not a great arm, but not like a –
it's not bad.
Not like a Chad Pennington arm. Like, no. Chad Pennington post shoulder surgeries, all that stuff. He's not like his shoulder's about to fall off or something like that. But yeah, like you said, he's not a access all levels of the field, but good enough arm strength, very accurate. I think if you're a placement guy, and I think Shador is a placement guy, this actually is a great event for you to come out. Like Stroud. I mean, Stroud had a better arm than Shador does for sure, but he was a placement guy, and I think he showed himself well at the combine. So to me, I if I was Shador, and I mean, I'm not, and like I don't got a team of people telling me all this stuff, this, that, and the other, I probably would have wanted to do it at this event. But so that's a strength of his. The only thing is, I think he is a bit of a sack eater. I know this is. I mean, I have had Dion, Coach Prime, like tell me to my face, like when I said this was Super Bowl 2 years ago. I said, you know, Shador, like give me the scouting report on Shador. Like, what can he do to get better in his, you know, in his second season as a starter? And he said, get protected better. You know, like get better protection. I'm like, okay, that's interesting because, you know, those are your players too. But
you recruited them as well.
Yeah, your players too. Note that down. But, you know, I watch that and I get that the offensive line's a talking point, but I think he does have some sack-taking tendencies.
Sure.
When I look back at Bridgewater's like first 2 years, sack rate actually was kind of high, 8.8, just shy of 9.0 the first two seasons. Yeah. So maybe that actually – I thought Teddy was a bit better – of a non-sack. Because in Carolina he actually was, and I thought that was the strength of his game. So that's something that, you know, sometimes like a sack eater's a sack eater, you know?
Yeah,
like Justin Fields can't break it. Sam Howell, he can't break that habit, right? But maybe it's not, like all things, not a universal truth.
And that's the minefield with comps is
when you
say somebody like Teddy, are we talking about Louisville Teddy?
Right.
Are we talking about early career Teddy? Are we talking about mid-career Teddy where he got better at certain things? Or are we talking about late career Teddy where he's, you know, the veteran clipboard holder that's, you know, an influence on a young quarterback? Which one are we talking about?
Rarely
when somebody throws a name out, do they throw out a where and when?
Yeah.
Right? And I try and do that of like, you know, I was saying that I was comparing one of these defensive linemen to like Chris Jones, but it's Mississippi State Chris Jones.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Not the Chris Jones we have now.
Not closer in Super Bowls.
Absolutely.
Chris Jones. I gotcha. Yeah. No, and I will be doing some of that when we get to the wide receiver position in terms of a comp perspective. So just last thing before we move off quarterbacks, any other guys, like, you know, I know there's the Jackson Darts.
We got to talk about Ashton Jeanty.
Well, no, just before we get to Ryan, I know you're itching to get to running backs, but just any other quarterbacks, like, you got a strong take on kind of here.
I really like Kyle McCord.
Okay.
I almost flew to Syracuse this season just to see a game. They were playing VT in Syracuse, and I said to a couple of people, like, I really think there's something here.
Interesting.
And I want to go see it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I watched him a lot doing Ohio State last season, and I didn't think there was a lot there.
Me neither.
But a tremendous improvement this season at Syracuse.
Very different. Obviously, a change in the coaching staff. I'm from near Syracuse, so I always kind of watch Orange Ball. I pick teams that have blue and orange colors and have terrible results.
I was going to say, the Bears
It's a character flaw.
We get a lot of tortured Bears content on this particular feed because Andy Behrens is on the show.
Oh,
so,
well, there you go.
We are stock full of that. So you're in familiar company here.
But as I looked at that change, and I looked at the early results this year, and I looked at the early tape just briefly. I'm not talking about full tape study. I went, that looks different. That looks better. That looks closer to what I hoped he was going to be at Ohio State. Got to interview him at Shrine Bowl. Really like the makeup. He thinks about it the right way. And yes, there are some bad things. There are holes in all these quarterbacks game. But right now he's being talked about late third, possibly fourth, some boards even fifth, which I think is insane. For again, given the quarterback strength in this particular class, he's going to have a great week. He can make money at this event, and I think he's going to. He's going to separate himself from that group he's in or put himself at the top of that tier, and he's going to be – people are going to go back and go, oh, my God, that Syracuse offense was insane, and he was leading. He was the point guard all season long. So I think there's maybe more to Kyle McCord than meets the eye. Maybe he's a transformer.
I like that. Okay. No, I think that there's going to be guys that go in that third round range, and because like it's just not like it's a little bit like the 22 draft class. Now I think we're gonna get it's a little bit better. It's definitely better at the top. I think Cam Ward versus like Kenny Pickett.
yeah,
come on, bro. Like what am I talking about here? But like Ward and even Shador, I think there's a step up from those guys in that class. But there were a lot of guys. I mean, Desmond Ridder went in the third round. He ended up getting a suspicious amount of starts for the Atlanta Falcons. You know, Matt Corral was in that era. Obviously, Malik Willis was in that range, and he's started for multiple teams now. So there are going to be guys like McCord. You know, there's Tyler Shuck. People are all of a sudden talking a lot about
Jackson Dart.
Now, he sounds like he might be the guy. He's either the industry psyop where he either does like somehow go in the first round, or we're going to talk about Jackson Dart as a first-round prospect, then he goes in the – second or something like that. So that's kind of his range. But yeah, there's a lot to sort of Dylan Gabriel too, another guy that then of course have to mention Nate Tice's favorite, the Notre Dame quarterback Riley Leonard. There's a lot of players that I think will be floating in that third to fourth round range that might like we might need to remember at some point. But I've waited long enough. Let's get into the running backs, EJ. And yes, let's start with Ashton Jeanty, who producer Colin wants me to talk about every podcast because he's trying to will him to get to Dallas.
No.
No. We don't be needing that.
It's not happening.
We're trying to get him to Denver. We're trying to get him to fall with Denver.
Are we? No, I'm just
me.
Kidding.
Matt Harmon is. I'm trying to will that to happen.
Good for you.
And that's just the bit I'm committed to at this point. But
again, he already knows how to wear blue and orange.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, didn't even really have to move that much, you know? He's still he's a Bronco. Like, I mean, come on. It makes all the sense in the world. Okay. But just tell the people, like, sort of why he's such a baller.
Yeah, he is a baller. I hate this word, but he fills it. He is a generational talent.
Okay.
When you start comparing him, and I don't care how you compare him. You can compare him on tape. You can compare straight production. You can look at advanced analytics. Very quickly, that pool gets narrowed down to like three or four guys, and they're all Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
It's like LT, AP, and I'm like, stop. Like, that's his, those are the guys we're comping him to?
The production is absurd.
Unreal.
I've pulled it up just on True Media. Like, and I the first time I saw it, I was like, I'm not filtering 2 years, right? I mean, he ran for 2,600 yards. I'm like, wait a second. No, what did I screw a filter up here? What are we talking about?
How did I blow this? That's not possible.
And he's just like up in term every category, you know, 28.5 first downs per rush attempt, 5.25 yards after contact per attempt. Like, it's just bonkers stuff. He is statistically an incredible player. And anytime you set eyeballs on him, like you said, it's there as well.
Yeah, he's built like a running back. He's short, low center of gravity, extremely powerful. He's got great, almost sort of preternatural contact balance. I mean,
I love contact balance, baby. Let's go.
He is able to not only have that in spades physically, but one of the things about his tape that impressed me after probably 2 to 3 tapes, and I watched a lot because you know me with running backs, was it seems like either they sped the film up for him or slowed it down for everybody else. And he's able to anticipate what other players on the field are doing. That's his blockers and defenders, and set himself for that contact. It looks like he's moving quicker than them. It's almost like a matrix thing.
Yeah.
And so he's in the proper position to bring all of those tools to bear. And then he links them down the field. He doesn't quit. You see a second move, a cut, a stiff arm, a dodge, runs through a guy. That's all one run.
Wow.
A lot of times in college, somebody will have a great strength. They'll throw the one card. It's like pass rushers, right? Mm-hmm. They either win or they don't. Running backs are kind of the same way. Either my first cut gotcha or it didn't, or my stiff arm gotcha or it didn't. And then they're done. Jeanty is never done.
Yeah.
He's in the third level of the defense looking for guys to run over because he can.
Yeah, he is, again, just a joy to watch.
Yeah.
And, man, like, as you're laying out all of that. And you mentioned the Matrixing. Maybe the comp for Ashton Jeanty is Keanu Reeves.
Neo.
Yeah. That's the comp. Danny Kelly from The Ringer obviously does a great job with like
the
shades of and the comps and stuff like that. Maybe like shades of Neo. Let's pitch that one to him later.
To me, okay, I will. Absolutely. Danny lives up near me and, longtime friend, much like you in the industry. And his comps are amazing. But Jeanty is, you do keep kind of running it back on that. He didn't do that.
Right.
Like, that's not possible. Yeah. And then the next play, he didn't do that. That's not And he did it against pretty much everybody. If you see a game he had under 100 yards, like, I want to talk to their DC.
Yeah.
Like, Wyoming did a pretty good job against Ashton Jeanty. And I'm like, how? Because nobody else did. Because a lot of people say, oh, Boise State, level of competition.
Sure.
He did it against the Ducks.
Yeah.
The Ducks have three linemen here who are going to get drafted, a linebacker who's going to get drafted, a nickelback who's going to get drafted, and Dan Lanning is their head coach. And he rolled up yards against the Ducks. So it's not a level of competition thing. This guy can play. Don't care where he goes.
Everybody with the 101 pick in their dynasty draft is just like salivating,
listening to everything
you just said here.
Yeah, yeah.
Not one of those, unfortunately. Shout out to me. Don't have a 101 this year.
Bum, bum,
bum. And I got it last year with Caleb Williams in Super
Flex
League, we'll see.
You know what that means?
What does it mean?
More leagues.
That's a good. No,
he's on.
No. We're all set on that.
Cut that part out.
Yeah,
I don't want my wife to see that.
Yeah, no, for real. Oh, she's not listening or watching. So give me a break. Okay, but the rest of the running back group, again, it's a strong class.
Great.
Who are the other names kind of like that people need to know here?
Yeah, right up at the top, O'Marrion Hampton, who's a guy that I've been championing for 2 years.
I love this guy.
Just waiting. I'm the receipts are out there.
Yeah.
2 years ago, I was like, he's coming. This is the guy.
Yeah.
He's my guy. And then
UNC back, by the way.
Yeah. University of North Carolina. Great power. I really like his all-around game. I believe he's sort of earned his ranking as probably RB2 off the board. First round, maybe. It's a positional value thing. Could go 25, could go 37, could go 40. It doesn't matter. Great player. Going to play right away. Cam Scataboo, everybody talks about him.
Skater boy.
He is a lot of fun to watch just from a pure like popcorn standpoint.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people get caught up in that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's more than that too.
Okay.
Like a lot of people are like, I'm just watching this for Cam running over people. He's great at that.
Yeah.
But he also has really good vision. He's got pretty good patience. His cuts are very good. And again, he links moves and it's all effort. He is going to sell himself to coaches or already has probably with film. They're going to love sitting down with him just from an attitude standpoint, but it comes with a lot of skill as well. So he's there. And then Caleb Johnson, the back from Iowa.
Another guy with crazy production and yards after contact.
Can both run over a guy and run away from guys. And that's pretty rare when you have that combination because, as you know, when you're setting up a running game, you are leaving one guy for the running back.
Yeah.
And if your back can beat them pretty much regularly and then run away from the defensive back from the other side of the field, you get a lot of long touchdowns. And he got a lot of long touchdowns.
Yeah, 6.4 yards per carry, over 220 pounds. We'll see again what he weighs in here. But he's somebody I'm excited to watch this weekend.
He is a ball.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like Jeanty, Johnson, Hampton, all those guys are super exciting prospects. I really like Hampton just from what I've seen so far. He's like my type of back, man.
Yeah.
You know, he can hit big runs, but he's also like a good sustaining runner as well. That's my type of back for sure. I'm trying to stay on track, but I'm also looking at these Ashton Jeanty's. He has 107 first downs this year, which is just bonkers. It's wild stuff. But I want to just real quickly before we move off running backs, tell me about the Ohio State guys, Henderson, Quinshon, Judkins, which, by the way, like Judkins – you know, is like a grinder back. That's a name that makes sense.
Yeah, it's
there's some advanced scouting for you.
Yeah, when we say that like people match their pets.
Running back
names match running back games. Quinshon Judkins is one of those.
Yeah.
So it really is. The NFL comparison is Sonic and Knuckles in Detroit, right? You got your speed guy and your power guy. Trevion Henderson is the speed guy.
Yeah.
And
there we go.
One of my favorite phrases that I steal from you all the time is trump card. What's the player's trump card, right? Trevion Henderson's speed might be the fastest back in this draft. Now, I think, and I said this last week and caught a bunch of fire for it because, you know, Ohio State fans.
Yeah. Famously pleasant folks.
Yeah, they're pretty sure they're guys. They're like, what do you mean? I was like, well, look, he is the fastest. And in terms of like pure home run hitter breakaway speed, he's the guy that you're pointing to in this draft. Vision, it's a little too much like DeAndre Swift for me, which means not always great.
Yeah.
So if the hole is there and he sees it, forget it. He's literally going to break everybody's ankles and angles as he goes by, but he might not hit it. And in terms of that down to down, you're talking about Marion Hampton. Like, yes, he can hit big runs, but he's also going to get what's blocked every run, which is a very strong point for a running back. I don't think Travion's there. Doesn't mean he can't improve there. But again, just being honest about what I see on tape, the speed is unreal.
Yeah.
Like it's unmanageable. It shouldn't be that much in one guy. Quinshon Judkins is the flip side of that. He's the knuckles. Vision's a little bit better, bigger, more run over guys. Travion can run over a guy here and there. Quinshon can do it regularly, grind out those yards. You need that. It's a great combination for them, obviously, this year. Going to be a lot of talk about them, but it's the guys behind them even. You know, the Devin Neals from Kansas, the Damian Martinez from Miami, on down the board, Jordan James from Oregon, who almost nobody's talking about. It's probably going to get drafted in the fourth or fifth just because of the numbers. He could start next year for an NFL team. Great back.
Yeah, I mean, you and Trevor Sikkim, who's in my line of sight over here at dinner the other night, were talking about some running back like
R.J. Harvey. Yeah, he's a big R.J. Harvey
I know.
Guy.
I was like, I've never heard of this person in my entire life. So there's a lot of running backs that we need to know. But I like that Jenkins note. I'm going to file that away as, like, depending on which team drafts him and kind of, like, what is their rushing ecosystem. Because I think DeAndre Swift's a perfect example of this. Obviously, his now current and former coach, Ben Johnson, was like, we can't do the vision thing, whatever. Didn't work out in Detroit. He goes to Philadelphia, has a pretty decent year because they're going to give you those lanes. And then last year in Chicago, again, a little bit of a mixed bag. So Jenkins is definitely an ecosystem guy to watch. Let's talk about wide receivers here.
Sure.
And let's try to keep it, you know, not a 30-minute experience here.
I don't know.
I'm still working through, but I've got some takes on probably I've got like a good sample on about seven guys right now. Not a full charting sample, but I've got about seven. So let's have the Travis Hunter conversation because I haven't actually had it on this podcast yet. I've talked to 100 people this week. Yeah. And depending on like how many drinks I've had is like how extreme I'm going to say something about it. I mean, again, I had dinner with Colin the first night I was here, and I said something about Travis Hunter, a phrase that he's like, say that on the show. And I was like, I'm not going to say that on the show. I'm not going to say that on the show.
Self-preservation.
I'm not going to say it on the show. But tell me just again, from a receiver perspective, where do you view his game? What do you like? And I've got some thoughts here as well.
It's absolute insanity if you know any of the backstory.
Yeah.
So he was a defensive guy at Colorado. Everybody, I think the consensus here is you, as a rookie in the NFL, start him at corner because both game plans are denser and harder to pick up. It's really not fair to saddle a guy with a full meal deal of both. Start him as a corner because he's exceptional there as well. Give him a package of plays and let that grow through time. Well, Colorado started with the same thing. He sat in the defensive meetings. They had a small package of plays for him. They immediately saw how effective those were. And basically people say, oh, Colorado's offense is really simplified. It's because they were running the reduced package for Travis Hunter because they wanted Travis out there.
Yeah.
And he was obviously their most impactful receiver. And they could get away with it. They were winning. So if you think about that he wasn't even really sitting in offensive meetings and he had a package of like 15 plays and he did that at wide receiver, it's pretty tantalizing to say, oh, and of course you with your specialty, like if he could sit and specialize,
yes.
Do you know what we're talking about here?
This is the conversation I was having the other night where, he doesn't even go to the offensive meetings, right? And, like, that is insane because, to me, when I first got into, I'm going to start charting him or whatever, to me, I thought it was a little – because, again, I don't watch college football during the year. Right. Happily married man. I can't sell to my wife, like, let's let football ruin another day.
Yeah.
And it's not really part of my job. It would just be to, like, drink beer and watch games. Anyways, so I don't watch college football, but obviously I know he plays both ways, wins the damn Heisman. I'm aware of who Travis Hunter is.
For sure.
I was like, okay, we're going to come in here and he's maybe, has a small package of plays on offense or whatever. I mean, I'm looking at the snap count for the guy is it's unprecedented. It's ridiculous. And I still feel like it's a little bit under discussed. I mean, EJ, he played 13 games last year. He was over 100 snaps in 11 of those 13 games, total snaps. That is absurd.
Yeah.
I mean, it is absurd. We're talking about games like 131, 139, 133 snaps, 162 snaps against Texas Tech. That's nutso stuff. And the fact that he is essentially minoring at the wide receiver position, and he's that good. And I mean, again, the comp that I've thrown out there for him off the early reception perception data, he's like prime Odell Beckham to me. Ooh. From a release standpoint, like the movement confidence standpoint, the way he can pluck balls and has great tracking at the catch point. And I mean, against BYU, that was one of the games I charted. He just like gets a slant and rips it 58 yards, outruns everybody, sets up moves really well. It reminded me a lot of the conversation I just had with Malik Nabers at the Super Bowl, like how much thought goes into being an after catch player. You can see that he does that. I just think that everything I just laid out there is so unprecedented that he's that player at wide receiver and he's playing 162 snaps in a damn game. And again, he's minoring on offense. That's ridiculous.
There are multiple ridiculous things there, and anything I'm going to say is just going to kind of add fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
A bunch of those games were over 100 degrees.
God almighty.
And you're like, wait, what? And you're like, yeah, some of the early season games were over 100 degrees and he had over 100 snaps.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if I was walking through routes that many times, I would have fallen over. We talk about arm arrogance with quarterbacks all the time. You know, Cam Ward has arm arrogance, and rightfully so. Travis Hunter has athletic arrogance.
Yes.
On both sides of the ball.
There's so many like things you should never – nobody else should attempt to do some of the things he's doing.
No, and he does it with confidence, knowing he is clearly the best in any particular lineup. You know, if he's lining up against a DB, he's like, I'm better than you, bro. If he's lining against a wide receiver, he's like, I'm better than you, bro. And he's right.
Yeah, I mean, he is. And I was having a conversation with J.J. Zacharyson, you know, does great data modeling work. And, like, I know that some of the stuff from his, you know, and I won't spoil it too much. It's J.J.'s content. And I think he did an episode on his podcast that people can check out. But, you know, we were talking about, from a yards per route run, like some of the advanced metric stuff, it's not there for Travis. But, again, I think he's such an unprecedented case that you just kind of have to throw all that in. And, again, we're talking about a player who's still fifth in the FBS in receiving yards. So it's not as if there's not production there. But, like, yeah, there are plays, and you can tell – that are not part of that like Travis Hunter package of plays, where it's just like, okay, he's out there just kind of doing shit, for lack of a better word, and he still the football finds him because he is still that good, but it's not within like the structure of the. And this is I'm speculating a little bit, obviously, because I'm not in the meeting rooms and stuff like that.
You don't have to speculate on that part.
Yeah, it's just you could tell like. He's not the first read, anything like that. And it's still, again, Shadur finds him because it's a damn good
But
player.
I mean, imagine if you're Shadur, right?
Yeah.
Like, your success rate, if you put the ball anywhere near Travis Hunter, is going to be great.
Yeah.
So you're like, well, this hasn't gone the way we thought. There's Travis. Pretty good option. I'll just let him do his thing. I'm going to look great after
especially
the game.
If he's under pressure, all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a ridiculous player. Man, that was more energizing than this fake iced coffee here, that conversation. And the worst part is that it might not matter because he might not play wide receiver. But my theory, though, EJ, is, and again, I've talked to people about this, that, like, let's just, again, go back to the Titans example for a second. Let's say they stick and just pick him at one, or, like, they do trade down and he ends up on the Titans roster. I get that, like, they have a need at corner, even though L'Jarius Sneed didn't have a great year last year, but they just spent a bunch of resources to get him. They have some guys at cornerback, but they still need a corner. Here's the thing, though. Imagine he gets to camp and, you know, Calvin Ridley, good player. He's fine. I had a pretty decent year last year, but still he's, like, 31-year-old Calvin Ridley, and then it's one of these guys running routes there, you know, Traylon Burks, like he is going to immediately be like the best receiver on that roster. So I would just say final thought on the Travis Hunter thing is don't be writing anything in pen about what he is or is not going to do, because it is number one, it's going to vary team by team.
Yep.
It's going to vary person by person what they think. He also should have a say in this, and we had that salary conversation earlier. And again, lastly, it might change once he gets into whatever building he goes to.
I think it probably will. I'll give you another quick example. It's Pats, right?
Yeah.
The Pats pick him, and they're pairing him with Gonzo. And look, as a guy that doesn't just watch offensive football, I'm like, let's go.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That would be a tremendous pairing. But again, Drake May goes, hey, man, you want to come into the drills?
Yeah.
And he throws him one day. What do you think Drake May is going to say to Mike Vrabel?
I want that guy on the field every day.
Coach, you want me to succeed? Gimme.
Yeah, he feels like a Vrabel guy, too, because he's tough as shit. Like,
100%.
Just, yeah, he feels like – I mean, Vrabel, I keep coming back to the T. Higgins thing, and people are like – oh, and I've been like, oh, man, the Patriots should just pay T. Higgins whatever they want. And then I think, Mike Vrabel, you know, has a real kind of like
type
at the wide receiver. But I mean, just positionally, especially
a football player.
Yeah, yeah, football player. But positionally, they're going to sit there and think, look at all the games T. Higgins has missed and all that stuff. And then you're telling me, like, the guy who's playing 162 snaps in the game, Mike Vrabel's not going to be like, yeah, I want that on my football team. So, yeah, there's a lot of examples like that. Let's talk about some of the other wide receivers here who will definitely be playing the WR spot.
For sure.
Some of the other guys, like, again, you've mentioned Tet McMillan. There's Luther Burden. There's Matthew Golden. Emeka Egbuka from Ohio State. Now, I've seen all these guys, but I kind of want your thoughts on like that group of players.
Yeah, I'll start with Emeka. Great player. Thought he might come out last year. Really love his game. Obviously, the Ohio State wide receiver pipeline is ridiculous. He's next. He doesn't have all the attributes of the guys that came before him, but he is a guy that I look at. I put out a tweet the other day that was like, if you want a great, athletically talented player that is going to give you 7 to 8 years of very solid production and is going to come into the pro level and start there, it's not like he has to reach that plateau, Emeka Egbuka in this draft for me. Like, he's that classic wide receiver too.
Yeah.
He just comes in, you plug him in, you're like, he's doing his job, he's winning his routes, he's, you know, that second option for us. Utterly reliable. Great, great football player. Love him.
I love that Houston landing spot. You know, obviously, it's his former quarterback, and C.J. Stroud. But also, man, they need that, like, gritty, dirty work guy. And that's where he stands out among all
and
these.
And he knows, like, Stroud.
Obviously, yeah, he knows Stroud. But that's, like, the exact type of receiver that they didn't have last year that they certainly need.
Right.
And they need a wide receiver, too, right now. Because, unfortunately, Tank Dell is just a guy that you can't count on this year.
Sure.
And like, well, I don't know. I was talking with somebody about this the other night. Like, Tank Dell went from you know, a cautionary hey, he's an outlier, to a cautionary tale, like, real quick from the size perspective. And that matters when we're talking about a guy like Tez Johnson in this draft class, he's even smaller than Tank Dell, but he can also rip it. So, again, I think Houston would be a great spot for him. But, yeah, he's different than all those Ohio State wide receivers because he's not the same separator versus man coverage as a guy like
Jax.
Even, I was going to say, obviously, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, but even JSN, man, like, JSN – I loved him as a man coverage beating route runner. Egbuka is more, again, that dirty work player. But, yeah, he could come into the right landing spot and be immediately productive and catch a lot of passes in year one. Tet McMillan, I'm glad you brought up the 40 thing because, you know, I've definitely noticed that first of all, let me say, like, I love his game. I think his film's really good. He's definitely on that. He's not Drake London, but he's on that, like, axis of receivers. You know, if we're talking about, like, to me, I think the archetype is – Michael Thomas is the peak. Then there's, like, Drake London's right there.
Yep.
And then you go a little further down to, like, the Michael Pittman's, Courtland Sutton's. Like,
sure.
He's kind of on that, closer to, like, the Courtland Sutton axis of that, which is still, I mean, sort
of a very Sutton's good NFL player.
Damn good NFL player for sure. But that 40 time I do think is something to watch for this weekend because I've noticed that, you know, my old Kuiper's had him slipping to, like, the Chargers, which, by the way, that's exactly what the Chargers – who gives a damn about his 40? That's exactly what the Chargers need. DJ had him going to, like, the Bucks. Again, these back half first-round teams.
Right.
If he goes out and runs, like, a low 4.5, I think that's not happening. He's going to go higher than that. But if that 40 is a little lower than that, that's where it could come into possibility.
Yeah, his win, Tep McMillan's win this week is probably – anything under 4.65 is not burn it down territory. 4.62 is fine.
Oh, yeah. But I think 4.62 could get him. And this is so stupid, whatever. But, like, it could get him to slip to that range.
No, and those teams would be very happy because there have been some very productive receivers who've run that fast. But if he goes a little higher, if he runs like a 4.67 or he runs something worse, he slips or pulls up, right, and he says, oh, pro day, there's going to start to be that conversation. That's going to become a much more realistic option, which it's not been since kind of preseason ranking. Like, preseason ranking, Tevin McMillan was wide receiver one with a bullet. They were like, he's coming back. He's 6'5", you know, 210, great boundary control, awesome hands. Like, not the sharpest routes, but again, it's not necessarily his
game. But very fluid, like fluid.
Can win in, I would say, interesting and creative ways. We talk about that with a quarterback. Well, they got to throw to guys too. And if you get that kind of mesh, he could be a contributing player right away. So a win for him is just not terrible this week.
Yeah, 100%. I hope he does because, man, I really like him.
Oh, yeah.
Player.
It'd be great if he does.
Yeah, it'd be really great. That's obviously something to watch. If in terms of the other guys in this class, if they can maybe close that gap a little, like, what do you think about a guy like Luther Burden? Because I think, like, there are big opinions on Tet McMillan. I mean, there are people, everything we just said, there's still people I know that have him, like, the fifth overall prospect. Like, Hayden Winks, I think, had him as the fifth overall prospect in this
Hayden
class. Hayden loves him. There's a team I know in the top 10 that has him like as a that type
as a
of
viable pick.
Has, yep. Has him as a viable pick, and like one of the top, like a the tier one prospect in this class, whatever. So there's a wide range of opinions on Ted. I think there's a lot of wide range of opinions on Luther Burden as well.
It happens all the time in college football when we get a big disparity, right? Sometimes it's a coaching change, sometimes it's a usage change, sometimes it's an injury. Luther Burden has the transcendent season last year,
yeah,
right? And this most recent season, fine, but not as good. They had some quarterbacking struggles. There were some other things that get crept up. Wide receivers who, again, are having that slip in production get frustrated. He's no exception. Got some dumb penalties.
Yeah.
You know, was a little mouthier on the sideline about that. He was just, come on, I can help the team more than this. And I'm not going to hold that against him. In fact, a lot of coaches are going to love that. But the real question for teams and fans and everybody else is, which Luther Burden am I getting?
Right.
Right? Am I getting the guy that was setting records the year before and we were talking about it slipping into Heisman consideration? Or am I getting the guy that, you know, kind of underwhelmed and has fallen down the rankings? Like, where is it? Somewhere in the middle? That's probably the real answer. But like, how much? Because that's the real question when you're trying to stack him at the top of this board against these other very talented wide receivers.
I really liked the film this year. You know, I thought from like a man coverage perspective, was really strong. He's good after the catch. Obviously, that's the easy part of it. So, you know, he's mostly a slot guy, mostly played in the slot, but you know, Malik Nabers played a ton in the slot at LSU, and like obviously he was someone you saw the man coverage beating ability. And I think like there's some like Diet Coke Malik Nabers to Luther Burden's game.
Oh, that's one way to describe it. I think it's just there's a lot of the way I would describe his tape this year is with a lot of distraction.
Yeah.
Right. Great route. Bad quarterback.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Not his fault.
Yeah.
If you're charting it,
that's what I'm here for.
That comes out. That's great. But then there was, you know, good route. Okay. Quarterbacking. Hit him in the hands. Concentration drop.
Yep. Yep. There's
and I know
drops
are noise, right? But yeah.
But still.
How much noise? And then when you start to sort of add it up, it's just like there's a lot of noise here. There's drop noise. There's bad quarterbacking noise. There's quitting on route noise. He definitely didn't run all the way through some of those routes when he wasn't targeted this year.
Yes.
Some quarterbacks are going to be okay with that. He made his quarterback look a little worse in certain situations because of that. There's just a lot of things you're like, can we drop those out? Because the pure version that we got to see last year, if there is such a thing, was cleaner and better.
Yeah.
And I think everybody loves that, and not everybody loves what now. So again, it's that question of where are we going to be on that continuum?
And that's why I think that wide range exists on him. So he's definitely going to be a profile that I really am looking forward to rounding out. Any other receivers that you kind of want to hit on before we get to tight ends?
I'll just give quick shouts to Matthew Golden from Texas. I really like Jaden Higgins. I want to see how he runs. I think this event is built for him. He can, again, put some shine.
Interesting. Okay.
He's a big guy that's going to run really fast. And, you know, classic X down the boundary. Those are exciting guys. And there, again, there's a lack of them probably near the top of the draft. Medicals are really big for Savion Williams from TCU.
Yeah.
Great height, weight, speed profile. You know, is everything going to carry through? How's he going to run? But again, if that guy runs 4.32 or 4.37 and he's 6.4, like, oh, hey. So we'll see names like that. And then you mentioned guys like Tez Johnson down the board. And I'm really interested in guys way, way down the board, like Kyle Williams from Washington State, who I think is just going to creep up all the way throughout the process as people become more familiar. Washington State was obviously not a powerhouse this year, so they didn't have a lot of high-profile games. West Coast, you know how it goes. Kyle Williams is a great, solid guy. A guy like Nick Nash, who was incredibly productive. These guys are going to creep up. Not because the other ones are falling, but you know how this goes. As we go on for 2 months and people start to nitpick, they're going to look at a guy like Kyle Williams and go, damn, like that's a pretty solid wide receiver. I'll take that.
100%. Keep an eye, too, this weekend on Trey Harris, another guy I think could really help himself with like a big weekend because he's 6'3", 210, you know, in that neighborhood. He's a big X receiver that can beat man coverage. Now, like his yards per route run against man coverage is like it's absurd. Running like the games I've charted so far, it's like 54% screens and curls. So it's a stripped down route tree, but there's so many good teams that need an X, and he could be an appealing option for them. So that's another guy.
Sure.
We're going to have this is the scraping the surface of the wide receiver discussion. We'll obviously have a billion more of these conversations throughout the course of the next couple of months. EJ, let's talk tight ends here before we throw to break. It's a great class, and I don't want to undersell it here because there's a lot of fascinating names.
No, it's amazing. Tyler Warren is the top of my board, the Penn State tight end. He's kind of Mr. All Everything.
Yeah.
Penn State lined him up out wide, in the slot, in line, as a fullback. This is my favorite one. As an eligible receiver center.
Really?
Yes.
I got to see that play.
Unbalanced line, and he caught the touchdown on that play.
There we go.
And he threw one because he's a former former high school quarterback, and he's a lefty, and he threw a touchdown this year.
Georgia did some of that with Brock Bowers. This is like that on steroids.
Just bigger.
Yeah.
Warren's not quite the yak threat that Bowers is in terms of elusiveness, but he will run you over and can block and whatever else. Colston Loveland, really interesting player, and I think he's a power slot.
Okay, yeah,
like,
no.
He's not a great blocker. He's not functionless there, but he kind of reminds me of, like, Isaiah Likely. Isaiah Likely was, like, good at one block, and Colston Loveland is good at one block, but it's a different block.
Yeah.
But he is so fluid and such great hands, and his route tree this year – because, again, Michigan had their own quarterbacking struggles, was reduced. If you look at his route tree last year, they used him for everything, and he was good, and he can win that way. So if you're going to use your tight end like a power slot and throw to him 85, 90 times a year, Colston Loveland is your guy, pretty much custom made.
Yeah, he strikes me kind of as like what people wanted Dalton Kincaid to be a little bit.
Yes.
Like he's the supercharged, maybe actualized version of that. And from a fantasy standpoint, man, like if that guy hits.
That's correct.
It hits.
Yeah, he could win you your league.
Could win you your league. Could be like, you're going to have to take him in the first round of your dynasty draft. But like, again, if that hits, you are hitting it out of the freaking park.
100%.
So yeah, man, he's obviously a critical player to see the landing spot on. Hit me on to some kind of thoughts about, you know, Mason Taylor, Harold Fannin Jr., some of the other guys in this
class. Love this tier of the tight end draft because the big discussion we already talked about, but Gunnar Helm is a guy you're going to see from Texas who, as you're going through his film, you're trying to chart negatives, right? And you're like, no, not really, no. And he didn't get a full range of usage there, but you see examples of all of it. And you're like, no, he can do that. He can do that. He can do that. He can do that too. And pretty soon you're like, damn, he's a better player than I thought he was. I really like Gunnar Helm. Elijah Royo from Miami is really exciting, super fluid, athletic, down the field guy. Cam Ward was finding him a lot with that arm. Mason Taylor, I really like. I think he's the guy that's probably talked about the least that is in this group and has kind of earned that place, but people aren't talking about him yet because they're talking about Helm. They're talking about Arroyo. They're talking about Harold Fannin, who is very, you want to talk about divisive. Fan is divisive. We had that conversation this morning on our Underdog podcast about is this Juszczyk 2.0 or is this like Gerald Everett? How do you see him? What do you want your tight end to do? He can kind of do it all. The thing that's a little bit goofy about Fannin for me is, yes, he's a little bit smaller from physical profile. No, they don't ask him to block a lot. And again, the Isaiah Likely comp comes up, but I think he's got more route savvy. And I think people miss it. So whenever you get to watching Fannin down the field, look at the subtle things he does with head fakes, with leans, with just little jab steps. He works down the field as a wide receiver and works himself open and earns a lot of his yards. So I think there's a lot to Harold Fannin. Even Terrence Ferguson, saw him on the podium this morning from Oregon. Again, a contributor for that great Oregon team. A bit more of a red zone guy than I think between the 20s guy necessarily. But that's a useful skill set too, and a lot of teams need it. So teams are going to be filling up on TE1, TE2, and even TE3 down the board.
Man, again, we just begun to sort of dive into these positions here. EJ really is like he's like the master professor of the draft, but somehow we've got him at the 101 class. So a lot more information could be given, but we're going to do positional previews over the course of the next couple of months again on this particular podcast feed. So we're going to dive deeper into all those names. Very good, like, introductory course here again, EJ, that you've given us. Let's take our final break. We come back, we introduce our new draft segment, and EJ is going to tell us some of the best players that fit into it right after this. All right, we're back, and we are introducing our new draft season segment here, Stand on the Table. All right, so when we bring people on to discuss the draft these next few months, we're going to be having them stand on the table for a prospect of theirs that they absolutely love, that they want to go to bat for. Because EJ is the debut guest for this segment, you get to do more than one.
I get an extra card.
You get some, and I know you, man. You're not the type of guy that could come in and you're like, let me just do the one name.
It would be so hard.
Yeah, yeah. You're one of those guys, just like me, when people are like, oh, who you like at receiver? Give me one guy you really like. I got to give you 3.5.
That's right.
We're going to do 3 here.
Okay.
Give me your first prospect in this class. And I'd love it if it was on offense, but you can split it up here because you got 3.
It's
stand
fine.
Stand on the table for here.
I will keep it offense because
okay.
This is where we are. Bashal Tootin.
What?
Bashal Tootin.
Okay.
Virginia Tech.
Okay.
Running back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I know there is a Virginia Tech running back, but did not know the name.
Fast as hell. Has a knee injury. Medicals are going to be huge for him this week.
Okay.
Ran part of the season with a brace on in games. Was very clearly running with one leg and still outrunning people. His game reminds me a little bit of Kenneth Walker.
I like that. That's spicy.
It's so spicy.
Okay.
And if he heals up and gets clean medicals, he's still going to be down the board because of the depth of this running back class. Go watch his tape. It is pure popcorn stuff. It's ridiculous. Love Tootin.
Okay, so again, Virginia Tech prospect, 5'8", 211. That's a good build for a running back. Lance Zierlein, NFL.com's got a Isaiah Pacheco comp. That's another big, violent runner. Pacheco, I think personally, Pacheco's just a tough comp for anybody because he's got a very singular style.
Honestly, if I'm doing a Pacheco comp in this draft, all credit to Lance because he does amazing.
One of the studs, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm going to go with the Rutgers guy. Kyle Monagai.
Yeah, well, there you go.
He's more like Pacheco to me than Tootin is because Pacheco's really fast, and we got to see that at Shrine Bowl the year we were there, and that's actually how Pacheco got on my radar.
Okay.
Was he took a little swing pass in practice, and all of a sudden just ripped down. I was like, we've seen the violence. We've seen the no quit. We haven't seen that. What the hell is that? And then he becomes Isaiah Pacheco. So I can see it. For me, it's a little bit more K-walk because – the first cut might not get you, but the second cut's going to kill you.
Yeah.
And forget it. You're not catching him. So a lot of fun there.
Yeah, he's definitely got power and a little bit of home run hitting ability, it sounds like, which is
a
great.
Lot.
Again, those are the type of backs I like. Where do you kind of see him? I mean, I know, again, the injury makes it tough, but
that's the piece.
Range of the draft, maybe type of system he'd fit best in.
I mean, he's got really good vision, so he could run power gap. And like you said, he's got a little bit more power than you think he does. He can run through people. But if you get him in wide zone stuff, so Shanahan-esque,
yep.
You know, you
that's
get
why people are excited about Kenneth Walker this year.
Absolutely. And it's a great fit. And once he gets that edge, again, if you're leaving one guy unaccounted for and your back can run him over and he's as fast as Bashal Tootin is on one leg, get out of here. It'd be pure fireworks.
All right, give me number 2.
Number 2, I will go with a wide receiver. I'm going to go way down the board
Malik Washington this year?
Our guy
Malik Washington?
Our guy Malik Washington, who didn't get the usage we wanted, but we're not giving up.
Never.
There's literally 3 of us. No, anyways. No, I'm going to go with Antoine Wells Jr. from Ole Miss.
Okay.
I started out in South Carolina. This is Juice Wells. Got to see him up close to the Shrine Bowl. And again, you could talk better about this than I do, but one of the things that we look at is how they're going to do versus man.
Yeah.
Right? Press. Because you can't be press and you're going to the NFL. You can be great in college and be terrible in the NFL because you're going to see it. Way more than you probably did in college.
Very much limits your deployment.
100%. If you can't beat it, you're not getting on the field. Antoine Wells Jr. was roasting people one-on-ones. Straight up, man, press, roasting people. Great release package. And I literally stood there on the field and said, that's a wide receiver 3 in the NFL right now. And people
wow.
might think that's, a backhanded compliment. It's not. That's everybody has 3 wide receiver sets, and not everybody runs 3 wide receivers deep.
Yeah.
You draft a guy like Juice Wells way down the board right now. I mean, he's in the, depending on the board you're looking at, 170 to 210 range.
Oh, yeah.
And he's fast. He had great production at South Carolina. Dipped a little bit, but still really good production, playing for Jackson Dart. And people are going to forget about him. Everybody's going to look into Trey Harris and Caden Prescorn and Jackson Dart. And Juice Wells is going to be there. And that represents a real value for a team that's going to be able to plug him in as wide receiver 3 and go, damn, he's winning.
Richmond VA guy, so I'm obviously
you're
I'm ready.
Board.
I'm ready to stand.
For sure.
But yeah, man, I think that's interesting. And again, in this class, that we're looking for depth pieces,
correct? Right?
Like, we're looking for that in this class, because there were guys like, and Malik obviously, I think was more of like a late day two guy, not a sixth rounder, but there was the neck thing and all that stuff.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But there were guys in that, in last year's class that, yeah, like deep down your wide receiver board, you're like, you get him in the right spot, like we could be talking about a real deal contributor with some upside. It doesn't seem like there's that many guys in this year's class that have that, but maybe Wells could be one of those.
He sure could. So third guy, I'm going deep.
All right. You've already gone. I had to scroll way down the list.
This is deeper.
Okay.
This is deeper. This is a dart throw, but we were talking before the podcast and you were talking about being pilled. I was
glad you didn't say what it was about, but you know, what a professional.
A little bit of mystery. It's what we call a teaser in the business. Brant Keithy, Utah.
Okay.
Issues galore. He's been injured.
Position?
He's tight end.
Okay.
But what's his pro usage? So Brant Keithy has been at Utah so long that Tyler Huntley was throwing him balls.
Oh my God.
Right. So,
by the way, you said you were going deep. I had to scroll all the way down the NFL.com combine invite tight end page to get to our guy here.
You're going to find a borderline draftable grade on Brant Keithy because of age and injury history. However, when you watch the tape, you're like, that's an incredibly useful guy. If I can take the offensive explosion parts of Juszczyk, not saying he's Kyle Juszczyk, I don't think he's quite the blocker that Juszczyk is, but all the fun stuff that we wish Shanahan would do with Juszczyk more often, because every time he does, it works.
Yeah.
Brant Keithy can do all that stuff, and you might be able to get him as a UDFA. That's ridiculous.
Like you said, history of injuries. He's going to be 25.
Yep.
He is 25 right now. He'll be 26 later this year.
Correct.
So interesting profile, kind of very unique profile, but definitely I like it. Somebody to watch for very deep down the list.
Yeah.
And it's, by the way, just to put a bow on this, man, it's what you say, like, that's a useful player. I was talking with Mina Kimes about this yesterday. It's like, we all do this, and I know I do this. When you say useful, depends on the inflection of how you say useful, whether it's a compliment or a diss. Like, for me, if I'm talking about a receiver and I'm like,
he's
useful. That means like, and he's actually not as good as people think.
He's the dull knife in the drawer.
Yeah, he's the Wandale Robinson. Yeah, he's useful. Fine. But then if I was like, he's useful, or like, he's useful, like you just did, that is a compliment. So that's a little bit of just like
100%.
Draft coding for people to listen over the next few months. But I like this call.
Totally agree.
Again, weird profile, but you know, maybe somebody that could get in the building and make a contribution.
And great tape. Like, nice. I'm not going to say that. Self-preservation. Not going to compare him to a great yak player, but once he has the ball in his hands, he's not done. Let's just put it that way.
Love it. All right, EJ Snyder, you absolutely just like threw the ball up. Friggin' cranked a home run on this one, man. You cooked. Like, you came on this show and you cooked. So I appreciate you doing this, man. It was great to do it. Tell the people where they can find your work, and for God's sakes, subscribe to Bootleg Football on YouTube for the people out there, because if this like whetted your appetite about the draft, these guys, you and Brett, are going to be crushing it here over the next few months and well beyond that.
Yeah, we're going to be pouring out 5-gallon buckets of content for the next several months. So Bootleg Football, head to YouTube, search Bootleg Football. If it doesn't come up first, I'll go kill somebody, because it's supposed to.
there's no way it doesn't come up first.
Yeah, it should come up first. But we've got player interviews from Shrine. We've got regular podcasts. We're going to be doing a podcast from the field after O-line drills here at the Combine, which is going to be great.
Oh, hell yeah. It's awesome.
So all kinds of fun stuff at Bootleg. And then if you're a tortured Bears fan, we mentioned this earlier, you can check out Bear Era every once in a while. New Bears podcast for us this year. Growing subscribers there, and it's more a labor of love. But we're going to have some great draft content too.
Oh, amazing. Well, yeah, again, the people who come here for Andy Behrens and sad correct. Bear talk, and they're just not getting enough, they can go there and get that. I don't know if you are on the private jet like level of wealth that Andy is at. I don't want to assume, but you know, you're also younger for sure than Andy, who's I think is this year, I believe it's Andy Behrens' 78th birthday.
Oh,
which is pretty crazy. No, excuse me, 79th birthday.
Okay,
excuse me,
you missed one.
Yeah, my bad. That is my apologies. Anyways, what a great note to end the show on. All that great draft info and Andy Behrens burn at the end. You can't ask for a better podcast. And the best part is he's never going to hear this, because he does not listen to the show.
Can't even buy it.
Yeah, no. And nobody clip it and send it to him either. Okay. appreciate you, EJ. You absolutely crush it. Again, people, subscribe to Bootleg Football. It's going to be your hub for all the draft information you need, and then the summer series later on, which is always an absolute killer. So shout out to you. Thank you, EJ. That is going to do it for today's show. The next time you hear from me, from us, here on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, it is going to be our debut episode of Mock Draft Monday this draft season. Loved it so much last year. Running it back. Going to get a ton of great people all throughout the next couple months. But we're going to start with my buddies Nate Tice and Charles McDonald. That's coming to you on Monday. Until then, we're out.